Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
It's so much fun, Nancy. You're just helping me recollect things from my past that have, you know, created were traumatic at times. But I'm just so excited about our next segment. I think I've got some background there that I haven't even shared with you, but I think we'll both find it fun and rewarding.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. Today's guest is Jim Kahn, our third conversation about his 60-year entrepreneurial life. And you've probably noticed that, you know, he's tremendously aware and reflective and putting different pieces together of his past that are very helpful. I hope you're hearing as a listener that it encourages you to really sort out the different aspects of your own life to help you learn the lessons, mine the lessons that are there for you so that you can retrieve a diamond of the learning and continue with a shimmering diamond in front of you and inside of you and not let it darken with shame. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Welcome back for third conversation.
Thank you.
Yes.
Been fun.
Good. With a respectful sales personality inherited from his father, Jim Kahn began, our guest mentor today, began his professional business career in 1973 as a salesman for Wood & Kahn Company. Educated as a mechanical engineer by the University of Minnesota, Jim arrived in the business scene with abounding enthusiasm, but little business sense. Over the next 40 years, Jim encountered numerous reverses in businesses that many times took him to his knees, but never broke his spirit. And you heard in our last conversation that what would have broken his spirit, he said, was Anita and his family if he lost that in the process. But because of a deep, genuine love for each other and some ways in which they were able to repair their relationships, they have relearned from their experiences and are still all together today. Jim estimates that he has directly hired over 30 individuals during the course of his career. Jim had a knack for identifying gifted youngsters who had the talent to succeed in the mostly technical businesses that he either owned or managed. His greatest pride and accomplishment was not just the hiring of talented individuals, which, by the way, he flew around the country in the last venture that he was in to hire talented people, but the hundreds, if not thousands, of years of lifetime employment created for all those individuals at all of those businesses. So thank you for courageously venturing into a third conversation about emotional intelligence and business acumen.
Happy to be here, Nancy.
Oh, great. All right. So I thought a way to start this conversation would be to, like when we talked about your experience with Wood & Kahn, we kind of put it into a larger context of what was going on in the industry, in the farming world. You know, farms were struggling. I think you're going to be better at explaining kind of the dynamics of what was going on at that time that helped you to figure out, you know, that there was the things beyond your control that was causing the business that you had built to go from $8 million to $2 million. And in the 80s, the economy shifted. So tell us more about, you know, the bankruptcy piece,
yeah.
I guess, what
well,
was going
you,
on
you
in
know
the
what?
80s.
Nancy, I'm going to put you on the spot here. And I think what we need to do is to pick it up. When I left my last company, when I resigned from Rice Lake Weighing Systems, and we never got to that point at the end of our first talk. And basically, I resigned in 1995. I got back from polar flight. And I was top of the world. I was very cocky. I thought I knew more about running the business than the owner of the company did. And I actually started openly feuding with him and made a decision. Partly, I wanted to own my own business, and I knew I was never going to be an owner of that business. It was a family business, and he was grooming his son to come into the business. But I left there burning bridges, and it's probably one of the bigger regrets of my life is you should never burn a bridge. The owner of the company, Mark, was so good to me over so many years and gave me so much autonomy. And so I let my emotions get out of control. I let my emotions rule me as opposed to good business judgment. And it ended up leaving from that very, very successful, high-paid position, angry and hurt that I had to make the decision to leave.
Yeah, because Rice Lake Weighing Systems was the company that you joined after your bankruptcy and after you left Dave in good hands to rebuild the company.
That's right, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you had two dynamics going on then at the end of your 10 years with Rice Lake Weighing Systems. You had your family kind of falling apart where Anita had, what was she diagnosed with?
Melanoma.
Melanoma.
Skin cancer, yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, which has she survived that, obviously?
She's a survivor, yes. It's under control, and we're just fine in that department.
Yeah, and your youngest daughter had a torn ACL, and Brian seemed, your middle son, kind of out of control at that time. How was Lori doing at that time?
Well, you know, Lori's a survivor. She's tough. And I just she's very outgoing individual. She's a networker. Has always had a great support network, a great group of friends. And Lori was just fine. She was on to college. In fact, she went to St. Norbert over by Green Bay, and there are many, many times that I would fly down to pick her up on a Friday, and then fly her back to school on Sunday night, and often accompanied by some friends who were going to St. Norbert's as well.
Okay. And so you left or resigned from Rice Lake Weighing Systems, and you just mentioned now that you had burned some bridges there. You and Mark left on kind of a sour note.
Yeah. It was, again, retrospect, and as we start to talk about this emotional intelligence, I think it'll become clearer, and it certainly has become clearer to me after the time. But again, I was too big for my britches. I thought I was the main reason for the success of the company. I don't think I thought that. The employees were, but I didn't feel that we were giving them enough credit for the success of the company. And
that's an important distinction to clarify mm-hmm. for yourself.
Yes.
Because you do mention, you know, that you were too big for your britches. I'm just thinking, I don't think this was all about an out of control ego.
No, it wasn't, Nancy. No.
It sounds to me like what you're saying is there were some details that were coming together about how Mark was running the business where you were seeing that you wanted to take it in a different direction.
That's a great way of putting it. Fundamentally, I felt that the employees were a lot more important for our success than Mark did, and I think that's where our biggest split was. I have the deepest admiration for him, and his business is gone. I saw him here his dad's funeral. I went to his dad's funeral in Rice Lake, and he was kidding with me a little bit after the funeral. He said, "You know, Jim," he had promised me at one time if I took the business to $100 million, he'd give me an airplane. And he kind of bought that up again many years later after we'd gotten back to each other. And he laughed and he said, "You know, Jim, it wouldn't have been one airplane, but it would have been two airplanes."
Well, it's good that you were able to talk with him.
And again, I left on pretty hard terms. I burned bridges. I was upset with him, and if I had that back again, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, well, we don't always know how to leave relationships.
Yeah.
You know, most of the times, you know, it's the fight or flight or, you know, there's a diplomatic way. But at that point, it seemed like there was a lot of emotional intensity that you can control.
Yes, Nancy. And you're kind of leading into the emotional intelligence aspect. And I highlighted a couple of things. You know, there's four components, and I know you're going to drag us into that, and that's fine. And I, of the four components, I think I was okay in two of them. One was social awareness and social skills, which were outward. I was pretty capable in that area. I was very interactive with people in my position, but self-awareness and self-management had totally escaped me.
Mm. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you think your son was experiencing some of that same, those same pieces?
That's interesting. You're asking me a question. I'm having a hard time. Maybe as we start talking about Brian a little bit further down, that you may want to come back to that, but I'm not quite sure I know how to answer that one at this point.
Yeah, okay. It's,
I just wish that I had the self-awareness and self-management skills in being able to go to my, I left the company because I was upset, but if I'd had those skill sets at that time, I would have gone and sat down with them and asked them, would have been able to discuss it. I was not able to discuss the rupture in our relationship like I should have been.
Yeah, because you were you feeling out of control?
No, I don't think I ever, maybe yes from an anger standpoint. Yeah, I was very angry with him during that period of time as I was getting ready to leave the company.
Yeah, and so it was probably, so was it hard to figure out where to put your anger?
Yeah.
Or to sort through your anger.
Yeah, I wrote, I was very public. The 300 employees in the company knew that there was a above the table feud going on between myself and the owner of the company. And I put some things in writing that allowed me to express my anger. And as you can probably imagine, it was pretty eloquent and pretty articulate.
Yeah. And so you were pretty hurt.
Yeah, I would say, in fact, you know, you zeroed in on the defining moment. After I'd gotten back from polar flight and things had started to settle down. Mark had never said a cross word to me. He called me into his office one day and he said, "We'd better get back to business here." And it was a shock. It almost like he would, you know, punched me, given me a gut punch. And I said, "Oh no, here it comes." Because I'd seen him do that to other people at other times in other departments. And I said, "Here it comes for me." And my antennas were just absolutely up because that's the first time that in the 10 years we'd been together that he ever said a cross word to me. And instead of asking him, said, "Mark, help me out, help me understand that," I got indignant and angry and started confronting him as he had confronted me. There's my total lack of self-awareness and self-management.
Well, and we all get provoked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he possibly knew where to provoke you.
Yeah. Mark was a very charismatic guy and kind of controlling. There's no question about it. He had the remarkable ability to control things and people and that's fine. But when he provoked me, then I got angry and I kept that anger. I didn't let it go, which was wrong.
Yeah, and that's what's important to learn about emotional intelligence is after there's an explosion, you know, what do you do? you know, and you take care of yourself, you figure out what's going on, you investigate it. So you recognize that you're out of control, you become aware of what the conversation was because we end up replaying it over and over again. And then we kind of investigate it, like do the trail of now where did this come up or where, you know, where have I seen this before or what led me to this big explosion, because I'm usually not like that.
Yeah,
I must have been deeply hurt.
Yeah.
What were the elements that caused me hurt, that hurt mm-hmm. myself, my inner self, my heart, my spirit? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's similar to where we've been hurt in the past before.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense for you?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you hit a key component that I hadn't thought about. And it affected my spirit great deeply. I deeply loved working for the company and working for the man. And I thought that, you know, we could do no wrong in terms of going forward and building the business. And when he expressed dismay with me on getting back to business, and he was probably appropriate in doing so, I can't blame him for that. But it nailed my spirit. I think you've used a good word at the right time.
Okay. All right. Because in 1995, if we looked back on like what was going on in the field of psychology, well, Daniel Goleman had just written this groundbreaking book on emotional intelligence. And even though the term has been around decades before that, he was able to put it in a way that psychologists were able to more clearly talk about. And so to give you a definition, emotional intelligence is the ability to identify, use, understand, and manage emotions in positive ways to relieve stress, communicate effectively, empathize with others, overcome challenges, and diffuse conflict. So Daniel Goleman also explained what Jim was referring to about emotional intelligence. There's like four fundamental capabilities within that, which is self-awareness and self-management, social awareness, and social skills. And so if you're in the sales industry, you get a ton of training about social awareness and social skills. You also learn a little bit about self-management in when you're working with a client, but how you relate that to other relationships is where the transfer of skills don't always, you know, develop. And along with becoming a great salesperson is becoming self-aware. And when we're in situations like deep relationships with people, especially when it affects money, right? It's part of your livelihood that there's a lot at stake. It's important to set up those different boundaries around it, like what's okay and what's not okay. But we usually don't do that until somebody has crossed the boundary. And then, like, I find myself, when it comes to boundary setting, that I spend a lot of time thinking about, yeah, what is okay with me, you know, or what isn't okay with me, or what core value did somebody just step on, you know, that it has infused such hurt in my spirit and heart. So anyways, in the 21st century, studies on well-being, relationships, and their relevance in academic performance and work life have exploded. There's a lot more money going into that. And you can bet as a result of the coronavirus pandemic, there's a lot more research that's required to help people to manage the psychological effects of us being so isolated. So it's helped, you know, all of us to kind of shift into conversations about well-being that we normally wouldn't have talked about. So what was your understanding of emotional intelligence in the 90s, do you think?
Well, that's a very leading and fun question, Nancy, and I'm looking forward to getting into that. I want to bring my lifelong friend, Dick Harper, into the conversation. Dick, when I started at Wooden Con, Dick and I played racquetball together. And after racquetball, early in the morning, we'd sit and kind of visit. Dick was a clinical psychologist, a PhD, just starting his own practice. And unbeknownst to me, I was getting some counseling during that time. And as Wood and Kahn got into the bankruptcy phases, I really relied on Dick. He helped me understand a lot of things about my makeup and my being. And finally, as you recall in the previous segment, I departed Fargo for another business and another location, and kind of left Dick behind. Dick continued to grow his business in Fargo, very successful practice. He was an entrepreneur and retired. I think he had been 30 years into having his own successful private practice as a clinical psychologist. But Dick and I had kind of lost track of each other during that period of time. And somehow, when I got over to Rice Lake Weighing Systems in the middle 80s and into the 90s, we got reconnected. And as I had mentioned, the last 2 years, I had a conflict that, not the last 2 years, probably the last year, a conflict with the owner of the company at Rice Lake Weighing Systems. And I started talking to Dick about it. And at that point in time, Dick had just discovered Daniel Goleman, who you mentioned. And Dick started talking to me a lot about, in our phone conversations as we reconnected, and then both phone and personally. And we had quite a few sessions on emotional intelligence. And so I established an awareness that, one of the things he said, and I don't want to go too deep into this, but we all have in our brain what's called an amygdala, and it's the fight or flight function that controls it, controls us, and it controls our emotion. And I started to realize through my conversations with Dick is that my amygdala engages almost immediately, whether it's a pleasure threat, it's a real threat or anything else, or it's an emotional threat. And what happens when that happens is that any sense that you may have in terms of dialoguing or controlling a situation goes by the wayboard, and you end up with a completely emotional reaction that is a lot of times uncharacteristic of the situation.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's a key component to self-leadership mastery is to understand how your amygdala gets engaged and whether you freeze, fight, or want to flee the situation. And then you get into, now how do I want to deal with that conflict? And then people have different ways of doing that. But one of the ways to master your emotions in that area is to become skillful in identifying and understanding how you feel. It's interesting that in every person I've worked with, it has taken, I use a self-awareness mentoring journal. And the longer the person uses it, the more we end up just becoming so comfortable with talking about our feelings that they just naturally, we talk about them. And so it's really a good practice to develop. It's awkward at first to talk about your feelings, but the more that you do, I wanted to introduce to you as part of a way to achieve self-leadership mastery, which is taking charge of yourself while you're leading, is a good way to role model how to show other people how to work through their emotions. And a handy tool was developed by Mark Brackett. He's a PhD, and he's the director at the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. He's a professor also at Yale Child Studies Center. And he wrote a book called Permission to Feel, Unlocking the Power of Emotions to Help Our Kids, Ourselves, and Our Society Thrive. They've taught people all over the world in schools. It's called RULER. The acronym RULER, it means the R stands for recognizing. So like I was talking about before, recognizing that something's amiss, right? I'm feeling something. U is understanding what you're feeling. L is labeling it. What feeling is it? Well, like when you experience anger, it's always deeper than anger. So if you go one level lower, it's really, that's where the hurt is. That's why a person reacts really strongly. And then the E is expressing. So you decide how you want to express yourself and those feelings. And then the R is regulating. And I would also add repairing. So trying to figure out like a path back, like if I burnt this bridge, you know, what's the path back to kind of reconnection? And so this leads us kind of, Jim, to after you got some your counseling, and how did your friendship come back together with your racquetball friend who was a clinical psychologist?
Well, it turned into Dick and I have known each other 40 years, and it's come back. You know, you should never say you have a best friend, but if I had to pick one best friend out, it would be Dick. And we have a lot of common interests. He's really a powerful entrepreneur. After he sold his clinical psychology business, he became a business consultant and helped people with the things that now you and I are talking about. And he's very entrepreneurial in nature, very financial in nature. And so we get together personally, and we just have a lot of fun talks about, you know, some of the things you and I are talking about. And he's just got a tremendously inquisitive mind. And I just value his relationship and friendship.
Oh, great. So you ended up at Norwest Venture Capital in Minneapolis. Was this, and you continue, so your friendship with Dick has continued?
Yeah, yes. And frankly, as we get a little bit later on down, at once Norwest Venture Capital and I purchased a business from an inventor, I hired Dick to come in and do some consulting. But I'm getting a little ahead of the fact at this particular point.
So there's several different businesses that you were in that we would like to, you know, finish our conversation to close out on that helped with kind of the development of emotional intelligence and a concept that you brought into the workplace, which was open book management.
Yeah. First of all, when I realized I was going to leave Rice Lake Wayne Systems, I went back to my friend, my high school classmate in Alexandria, to see if he had a job for me in sales. He didn't, but he said, Jim, he said, I'm partnering with a venture capital company right now in the Twin Cities, and we're talking about buying a business from an inventor. We're going to need a CEO if that comes together. And so I interviewed. I went to Norwest Venture Capital, still pretty weak on understanding financial balance sheets and financial statements, but made a case for becoming the person to do the due diligence on the business. And if that was successful, buy the business and become the CEO. Well, that came together. It was about a six-month due diligence, and we ended up buying the business. We paid way too much. We paid $14 million for a business at that time that was sales revenue of about $6 million, but we didn't know it at the time. And so I ended
wasn't
up,
that disclosed or how, I mean, isn't that part of the due diligence?
Oh, certainly it is, but marketplaces change.
Between the 6 month time frame?
Nancy, here's another huge component. That was during the dot-com bubble, and venture capitalists had all kinds of money, and they were just throwing silly. It wasn't my money. They got money from me, but a very small component compared to the $14 million that they invested. And they had silly amounts of money during the dot-com bubble in 95, which led up to the dot-com bust in 2000. So we were the beneficiary of taking all that venture capital money and paying way too much for a little entrepreneurial business.
Okay. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so during the 5 years that you were there, you implemented an open book management program.
That is correct.
Yeah. Yes. So how did you come up with it? What was its purpose and how did it work?
Yeah. The company was called Stream Theater, and we were the manufacturer of a small robotic device for the packaging industry. And it took the place of repetitive motion, hand motion, of people and at that time putting software packages together was a big business. You'd have a diskette and a manual, and you'd have a whole bunch of things that would go into a box, and people would assemble these by hand. Well, our device was able to put these things together automatically, taking the repetitive motion out of it. And so my charter was to take that business from a $6-7 million a year company and grow it rapidly.
Wow. Okay. And what were you recognizing about how the workplace was changing?
Well, you know, I made a comment that I didn't feel we appreciated our employees at Rice Lake Weighing Systems, and that has always stuck with me. And I just realized the value that employees brought to the table in terms of building a business. And so I had come across what was called open book management, you know, that was more than a concept, but the idea is to tie the employee to the bottom line, just like entrepreneurs and business owners. So my friend Dick Harper was, as I said, very entrepreneurial, and I asked Dick to come over and help me implement a open book management program at StreamFeeder. And believe it or not, the venture capitalists supported it. They felt it would dilute their interest by about 5%, but I convinced them that by diluting it and sharing that with the employees, that we would more than gain that dilution by the increase in performance of the business.
And that happened.
That absolutely happened. It was what we did, and conceptually, I'll make it as short as I can. When you implement an open book management program, there can't be any smoke and mirrors. You can't just say, oh, we're having a good year, and we're going to share some money with all of you at the end of the year at the company party. That's frankly BS, and that doesn't motivate people at all. So what we did is we put training, we called it StreamFeeder University, and we started to teach people about making money in a business. These were people that worked on the assembly line and other areas of the business. And as we brought them up to speed from a knowledge standpoint, we actually would have Saturday sessions, and we put a financial program together. I had a very bright CFO guy, and a very bright guy, and he put together a plan where everybody had to figure out their monthly bonus based on the rating system the ratings that they had been given. And so when people did that, we had some $30,000-$40,000 a year people that were taking home $1,000 a month because the company was meeting its objectives and doing well. And that was incredibly motivating, not only financially, but from an emotional standpoint, tying employees to the bottom line. That's what open book management can do. And it's just an unbelievable, it was not just a concept. We actually implemented it and had a very good run doing that.
Yeah. And you sent me a document that shows kind of the 12-month trajectory. And from July 1998 to March 2000, I mean, it was very few. Up until that point, there were profit and losses, like over, you know, 8 million sales, but it was like you went from 8 million to what, 12 point or almost 13 million.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Nancy, what's more interesting about that chart that I sent you is the downturn component from 96 to where it went down. We put growth objectives into place, and everybody knew what those objectives were. And there was, when we bought the company, there were some employees there that had an entitlement mentality. Well, we never paid the year-end bonus like the previous owner did. They got disgruntled and they left the company, but it opened up positions for employees that were not entitlement oriented. We made the point of hiring, saying, here's the incentive program we have. There's no smoke and mirrors. We're going to teach you how to understand the bottom line. We're going to teach you how to drive money to the bottom line. And if we meet our objectives, we're going to share that money with you on a monthly basis. So it had the effect of driving out people that had an entitlement mentality and bringing in employees that had a entrepreneurial inclination and mentality. And then just as a component of that, what we saw was the people that did well, our rating system was not just rated on the technical aspects of the business or putting a machine together. We rated people on the culture, how well they embraced the culture of the company. And we found that people that were rated high in embracing the culture of the company were people that were going to become future managers. It was amazing.
Oh, wow. That is amazing. Mm-hmm. And how did you even come up with the rating people on the culture? Like, what would you rate? What would that entail?
Well, that was my friend, Dick Harper. We had, without getting into too deep, we had some very specific statements about how we were going to take care of the customer, etiquette, attitude, response. We had some things related to our technology that we wanted the people to understand. And we, there was one of, I don't have it in front of me right now, but my friend Dick Harper helped me put together a rating system where we used all those cultural components to give people ratings once a year. And then they would have a score. Everybody in the company had a score. Each person score was the numerator. All those scores added together was the denominator. And of course, the higher your score was, or your numerator was, the more you participated in the monthly payout. So it was just a hugely motivating thing. And again, there was no smoke and mirrors because everybody understood the formulas. Everybody understood how we drove money to the bottom line, and everybody participated in that on a monthly basis if we met our objectives.
Yeah, that's a great way to develop accountability, a deep understanding, too, of tying your work and your productivity to the bottom line of the company. Wow, excellent.
The culture was amazing, and it was the main component of making the company successful. We had a good product, but the culture made it hum. And, just back up a bit. I told you we had too much money and I got a little sloppy. I went to the venture capital head guy after we'd bought the company and said, hey, I think we need to bring some high-powered salespeople in here. And he said, just like I had done at Rice Lake Weighing Systems, had bought the best in the business. Well, I got sloppy and I just went out and hired some guys with MBAs that had worked in the business, which was fine for a period. But as we grew, I could see that they had, and I'm nothing against MBAs, trust me, I don't want to leave that impression at all. But these guys were more into the ego component of their position than they were in terms of helping the company grow. And initially, I was the one that rated them and had given them high ratings. So they participated at a high percentage in the monthly payout. When I saw that they weren't performing and weren't producing, and the people at the ground level were really busting butt to make the company strong, I gave them a reduced rating, and it absolutely set them on fire. There were three of them there, and they could probably see the handwriting on the wall. I had people performing at the very lowest levels in the company, contributed to that open book management style, and these guys were almost like a bump on log. And it took a couple of years, 3 years to sort through that. But I was getting ready to make a move, and I went to a trade show. It happened to be in Hawaii. Things were pretty good, and these MBAs got together, went behind my back, went to the VC in charge of the business and got me overhauled. So when I came back from Hawaii, I didn't have a job.
Oh my God.
I got fired.
Oh, geez. That must have been really hard.
Well, it was good, quite a shock. Another one of those things that took me to my knees. But part of it, and I'll have to, I had become so convinced, and my friend Dick Harper, that open book management was the right way to run a company, that I probably went over the top, and that's my emotional control. I even started to call it a manifesto. which can have negative connotations. And I don't think the VC in charge of our business was very happy with me positioning open book management as a manifesto. So I think combination, and the other side, Nancy, I'll have to tell you, money is fun. It's fine. And it's a great measure, but it should never be the pursuit. Entrepreneurs are driven by gaining wealth, but it should always be in retrospect a measurement. And with the venture capitalists, I stepped out of line because for them, it's the pursuit of money. And I was talking to the guy, the venture capital guy, who is head of our company and on our board. And I said to him one day, I said, Steve, I said, how much is too much? And there was silence. And he was really upset by that. And I think from that point on, our relationship, in retrospect, is something I should not have asked a venture capitalist. So there comes the emotional control and understanding of emotions.
Yeah, and your self-awareness, and managing your emotions, like you were saying, realizing that was coming from more of a controlling place, an ego place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We need to finish our conversation, but I would really like to have one more conversation to finish out your legacy, to kind of wrap it up in a way that feels satisfying to you. Are you okay with going with another conversation?
Yeah, I sure am, Nancy.
Terrific. All right. So thank you for this leg of your life. I think that we really delved into a little bit more about the emotional intelligence part and how this open book management system really worked well for a company when you can, take a look at the numbers, have a systematic way of looking at the culture and having employees kind of participate in the revenue part more closely. I think that works well and builds in, the infrastructure and the commitment to build the culture together. So thank you so much, Jim. Thank you, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère, de notre mère. Thank you for tuning in this week. We'll see you next week when we carve out one last section about emotional intelligence and business acumen and kind of close out this last aspect to Jim Kahn's life before he retired. Thank you. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become more effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? This is a dual innovation process. We've been doing this kind of work since 1992, helping small business owners and emerging entrepreneurial leaders with self-leadership mastery, business ownership success, and that leads to life success. We focus on the dual innovation journey of reinventing yourself as you redesign your business. We do this with one-on-one strategic mentoring sessions. We have several types of labs that you can participate in with your other peers. Both our entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab, which you can really get into the crux of how to run your business more effectively and become more competent. We have meaningful conversations that help with developing a culture that will work for you. I do weekly meditation and yoga that you can participate in to evolve yourself as you redesign your business. You can also sponsor this podcast. We're always looking for people to support our programming, build out our programming with us, and I especially love promoting you. You can get involved in all those different areas because when we mentor, you design a better life, a more fulfilling future as an entrepreneurial leader / innovator, as a competent business owner / practitioner, as a mentor / role model, and as a human being and master of self. Every client starts with a desire to shift something, clarify something, overcome challenges, grow profitability. We started with one entrepreneur. We've mentored thousands. We're ready to work with you. When you show up, we're here. So to get started, go to wementor.com. You can also call me at 612-804-8920, or you can reach me through email, nancy@wementor.com. get ready and take the next step today.